Hello, this is Rayson Varner, composer and music director for Borderlands 3, and you are listening to The Annotator.
Welcome to The Annotator, where composers share their thoughts and stories about their original scores. This is episode 104, where composer Rayson Varner talks about his original score for the video game Borderlands 3. This is Christopher Coleman, and you can find all episodes of this podcast at theannotator.net. Rayson Varner is a composer, music director, and sound designer who has worked on video games such as Prey, Red Faction Guerrilla, Aliens, Colonial Marines, and Battleborn. He has been directing music for the popular video game franchise Borderlands since the very first game, which released back in 2009. He returns to direct and contribute original music for Borderlands 3, this time with co-composers Jesper Kidd and Michael McCann. Borderlands 3 is an action role-playing first-person shooter video game developed by Gearbox Software and published by 2K Games. The game was released on September 13, 2019 for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, Google Stadia, Microsoft Windows, and Macintosh operating systems. It's the sequel to 2012's Borderlands 2 and the fourth main entry in the Borderlands series. At the hard edge of the galaxy lies a group of planets ruthlessly exploited by militarized corporations brimming with loot and violence. And this is your home, the Borderlands. Now a crazed cult known as the Children of the Vault has emerged and is spreading like an interstellar plague. Play solo or co-op as one of four unique vault hunters, score loads of loot, and save the galaxy from this fanatical threat. In this episode, Rayson Varner describes the complexities for writing a score for an RPG shooter hybrid game and the conceptual approach he ended up taking. He reveals how one of the goals was to write music that created various potentially conflicting atmospheres and emotions for the players, such as awe, humor, and adrenaline-spiking action. He discusses a one-time low-priority piece that he wrote for the game, which ended up being one of the most sought-after tracks by players and fans.
This planet is the birth of the Vault Monsters in all of Borderlands 3, and these are the most, you know, fantastical, big, you know, frightening creatures. These are the sentinels placed at every vault in the universe. This planet is asleep, but it's also ripped asunder from powerful energies. So I wanted this music to feel kind of like there was a lullaby to it. But it needed to be unsettling. It needed to be a place where you knew that you were not supposed to be there. So when we were planning out the score, I knew that Act 4 was going to probably be the most volatile area of the game. Having done two Borderlands before this, that just seems to be the way that these things always shake out at the end. So I wanted to make sure that we focused our internal efforts on those areas of the game where we need to be most flexible, and where, yeah, at the end of a firefight, at the end of shipping games, that whoever's working that music can get information quickly, can get synced in with level designers, and just be as efficient as possible. So, this series being an RPG shooter hybrid, I often lean heavily on conceptualizing music in more of an RPG space. Frequently in Borderlands, we use what I would call moments of beauty to really help offset the hyper-violent nature of the game and the jokey attitudes. Because in the end, we can't overlook giving the player an experience of awe. They need awe of some kind to, you know, make them feel connected and, you know, having this level of engagement that exists simultaneously with the humor and the action. Thank you. this planet needed to feel lonely when the music got into really sparse. It needed to feel epic, but beautiful and kind of mysterious when it swelled up into full arrangements. And so I wrote 7 suites of, kind of themes for the planet that use instrumentation that, you know, bends in pitch. Everything warbles and slides and drifts. All of that is an effort to make the player feel slightly unsettled while still, you know, kind of curious about the aesthetic around them. And this section here is what I would call the lullaby of Necrotopheo. This is why there will be bell tones and kind of soft chord changes and lots of airiness. And in a way, it almost feels like you're underwater. And part of that underwaterness could, you know, also be, arguably experienced as, you know, womb-like. I thought there was something interesting in the idea of it feeling underwater and womb-like in the birthplace of these monsters, and there seemed like there was kind of an interesting idea there that we could layer in as part of the experience and kind of do some secondary storytelling. Something that I tend to focus on in the series, not just myself, but with the other composers, is the idea that we are telling secondary stories in the music itself. And we will often tell narratives that don't really synchronize up with what's going on in the story. And it's not exactly the same emotion that the story's telling you should be feeling. Part of my goal with all that is to mirror the way that we actually experience our emotions. Because our emotions are never identified, and it's never just one pure emotion. It's always a mix of many emotions. And it's that complexity of feeling multiple things at the same time that make us feel like a story is more similar to real life. So when we build moods and beauty into the music that doesn't necessarily exist in the world, just because that doesn't align exactly what you're experiencing doesn't mean it's wrong. At least for the Borderlands universe, these things layer up, and because you can feel kind of these multiple feelings at the same time, you're going to always associate all those feelings with the things that are in front of you and associate them all together. So when we have very pretty music playing against this backdrop of violence and jokes, and then we also have moments of seriousness in the story as well, it just all kind of comes together to give you something that feels like a very authentic experience. So about midway through development, we identified a need for this, you know, hit single piece by a character named Digby Vermuth. We always thought it was just going to be this real kind of small joke track that plays maybe on the radio, you know, something along those lines. So time goes on, and this piece keeps getting bumped to for higher priority work. Keep thinking, oh, it's just a simple piece, and I've got an entire level of score, or I've got entire levels to get music into. So it just keeps getting bumped down in priority. Periodically, the writer Danny Homan, who came up with the idea and was writing for the character, we'd pass each other in the kitchen, and, you know, he'd be like, hey, don't forget about my Digby Vermuth, and, you know, I'd yell out to him, you know, something like that. It's like, I got your back, don't worry, I got your back, man, it's happening, we're gonna make it happen. So about a short 6, maybe 8 months later, we enter CERT, and the piece still isn't done. By now, the writers have a very legitimate reason to be worried. You know, in the back of my head, I even thought to myself, ooh, you know, how am I going to break this to them? And, you know, like, oh, I don't know if he's going to have the back. Like, what if I can't or something? So I get through all of my more serious cues, and then, the day after I get those implemented, I get to work and I close out as many bugs as I can, and then I skip out a little early and then spend the rest of the evening writing the backing track. So I send the backing track to the writers with an animated GIF saying, it's happening! That night I send the piece off to Julian. And Julian is the saxophonist of the piece. He's also an audio programmer. and a fellow composer, and he's largely responsible for the genesis of the new music system in Borderlands 3. So Julian, the next day in the morning, gets his sax and a mixer and sits in our vocal booth, and he just lays down all of his lines with this long instrumental version of the track of just running on loop. I get those bits back, and then I pull them into the session at home that night. I start editing up, I get our melodies together, and then place his solos down and get everything in there. The next day is maybe 2 hours mixing it quickly, and we get it in game, we test it out, and I just immediately just smile just ear to ear across my face as I'm playing the game and just really just enjoying this frenetic combat of explosions, guys dying, they're screaming and on fire, and I just have this like happy-go-lucky music playing. I get that final version together and I send it over to the writers, and like, it's just absolutely the best part of my day is when everyone else is working long hours, we're tired, we're stressed, worried about all sorts of things that, you know, we have to just make peace with because we can't fix them. And then I throw this piece over to the writers. They're just thrilled. I share it with some other people and everyone's really happy about it, and I'm feeling jazzed, and it was just such a nice point to have just this really happy thing introduced. Writers were really like kind of slaving at the end to get this out the door. So yeah, so you know, we went into this just being like, oh, this is just some joke track. It'll play, people will laugh, and then we'll move on to the, you know, the real soundtrack and get back on with the serious work. And of course, this is the piece everyone is looking for once the game comes out. Or at least one of them. But this is the one of mine that everyone's looking for. So I just, there's something just really funny about that. As a series, Borderlands has always been defined by a hybrid approach to a song and a score structure. So oftentimes we need to emphasize the mood of a level, and we need to use scoring techniques and things that you would be familiar with in a score to kind of produce some of those emotions. But when it comes to melody construction, or even just how we think about melodies in the game, We tend to steer clear of doing themes like character themes themselves, and we focus the melodies more on structure and a song approach or an album approach, where the melody might be kind of hooky. We may focus on more on the pattern of the melody. But that when you hear a lot of these melodies and just the structure of these tunes, they almost feel like they could come off an album as well. Not only does that energy really match the pace of the game and the style of combat really well, it also makes the music feel almost like there's this slight familiar component to it, almost as if you could have grabbed this off of one of the albums you're listening just on your own, say, in like a nice Saturday afternoon or whatever you happen to be doing. Gearbox has always been a very kind of scrappy, independent studio, and, you know, staying on kind of bleeding edge of electronic music taste also helps us kind of wrap the studio culture in with the fact that we're, you know, kind of this scrappy indie developer, and it keeps us, you know, kind of there on the leading edge of what's interesting and how things are changing in music overall. This, for some of the combat music at the very end of the game, I really went really heavy with the song structure. towards the end of the game, I really wanted to lean on the song structure heavily. So the combat music is almost more of an album approach or like a groove box that keeps shuffling over and over and over, while the ambient music is really kind of telling more of the deeper story of the environment. Another interesting thing about this piece is that this is essentially 61 different files all slotted into one 8-bar section where it randomizes everything. So that means in what you're hearing right now, this just happens to be with the way that I arranged it in my session. In game, bass line from, you know, minute 2 might play with a percussion line from minute 4. A melody from minute 3 might overlay a different part from, the first minute of the piece. All these things are constantly shuffling and shuffling and shuffling. So in game, this is a very different piece of music. As we worked through, more and more synthwave and cyberpunk elements started to come to the fore. So as the visual artists and lighting artists all started pushing that neon lighting, you know, bright purples, reds, really pure white lighting, it just more and more of that kind of synthwave or older, I guess I would call it retro electro type of sound, entered more and more. Every single game when I'm putting reference lists together, voice noise appears on there somewhere. So this whole track was kind of my opus to playing with real dirty tones and distortion and just lots of energy and vibe and grit that is strongly inspired by groups like Boys Noise. One of my favorite aspects of Borderlands is just how much fun you can have with everything. And if there's moments when everyone is having fun and doing high energy music, really satisfied with the emotional and the cerebral aspect of all the elements that are building into the music, we're having that experience making it, then we just know that everyone else is going to have that experience playing it. Thank you for listening, and thank you for playing the game. We do this all for everyone out there, and I'm just so happy that we've had such a positive reception to the music. It just really makes my day to know that other people are having as much fun with it as we had making it. So thank you, and tune in for more music. We have a very aggressive DLC schedule ahead of us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Annotator with composer Raisin Varner and his original score for the video game Borderlands 3. The original score for Borderlands 3 was released by Lace Records on November 11th, 2019 on digital and vinyl and can be purchased at Amazon.com, iTunes, or streaming on Spotify and Apple Music. You can hear more music by Raisin Varner at his official SoundCloud page, or you can follow him on Twitter at Raisin Varner. The Annotator is produced by me, Christopher Coleman, and you can find more episodes at theannotator.net or wherever you find quality podcasts. Wherever you do listen, please take a minute to leave us a rating or a review and let us know what you think about the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at @AudioAnnotator or on Facebook or Instagram at TheAnnotator, or you can send us your feedback about this or any other episode via email to theannotatorpodcast@gmail.com.